Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another fine edition of Movie Mastery. It's October, which means it's time for our spooktacular extrava horrorganza.
Well, you don't want to call it our White Ween celebration?
No, that's for the other show.
Oh, isn't this getting infected with the White Ween spirit? You know, John, White Ween tends to get everywhere.
It does. Where it no one wants it to be, actually.
Yeah.
White Ween tends to get everywhere it shouldn't be.
Yeah, White Ween is the mildew of the Ween community.
So I am John. Over there is Jeff. It is time to get into a movie, and this time around we've got a doozy. It is The Night Train to Terror.
The Night Train to Terror.
The Night Train to Terror.
Working on that night train to terror.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was, it's definitely a horror anthology.
Yeah, so this is a movie that is, a lot of times you'll see those horror movies where it's like, you know, Tales from the Dark Side, or Tales from the Hood, or Tales from the Barrio.
Yeah, or Demon Knight, Tales from the Crypt.
No, that was just one movie.
I know.
Yeah.
It was just one movie. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, what I'm saying is you'll have movies like what I was talking about that are anthology type movies.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. So more like Tales from the Crypt, Bordello of Blood.
Not at all like that, no.
So like if the two of them were in one movie together.
So like if both of those were in one movie and then there was also another movie and then they cut out most of the parts of those movies, then yes, it would be exactly like Night Train to Terror.
Oh, okay. Great. Now I think I'm on board with what you were saying.
Yeah, so
it's just like Tales from the Crypt.
Yes.
Okay.
Exactly like that.
Yeah.
So the normally in the horror movie anthology thing, you get, you know, upwards of five, usually around three.
That depends on what you're watching. If you're watching like that ABCs of Death, for example.
Oh, yeah. Then you get, you know, a whole bunch.
You get 26.
Or 27.
Oh, that's right. There's an interstitial.
Oh, period.
That'd be great if ABCs of Death had a couple of extra. Like, there were so many people who wanted to contribute that they had to move into, like, those Greek AE things.
Oh, yeah. No, it's the ABCs of Death, and then they just threw in things that were like, here's the double L.
Here's that weird open-bottomed German B-looking thing. I think it's called a Schlob.
Yeah, here's a thorn. We put that in there.
Here's the symbol for pounds sterling. It's a horror movie about Brexit.
Oh, that's basically all of England. So normally you get those and they are fully contained little movies and they're tied together by some flimsy premise. And then while we do get the flimsy premise in this, we don't quite get three actual full short movies.
Instead we get four actual full short movies.
No, we don't get,
I think,
a goddamn thing is what we get.
No, it's really clear that what happened with Night Train to Terror is that the director, a guy named, I think, John Carr, basically worked with whoever the producers were and so on to buy up old horror movies, chop them into three little semi-stories, and then wrap them into the interstitial.
Yeah, the weird thing about this is, since normally you get, like, an actual full, we made this for the movie, little movies, you find ways to, like, tie them in, or they somewhat go with a theme, and this is just random bullshit.
Well, they tried. They tried to make that interstitial make sense with the stories, but to do it, they basically had to end several of the horror movies before the scary horror endings. I don't want to spoiler anymore.
No. It is amazing, but this 1985 classic horror movie where there is a train and God and the devil are on it, and boy howdy, they're fighting over souls. It is it's real bad. And it's a lot of little movies that are chopped up for some reason.
I guess just for distribution purposes.
Yeah, like normally when you'd go into like a Walmart or like a gas station and they have those packs that's like five shitty movies that you can buy as a like DVD pack.
Yeah.
It's basically if one of those got turned into one movie.
Well, this is a dying era of filmmaking. Nowadays, all three of those interstitial shit movies that we kind of got to watch scenes from would get full-on DVD releases and a whole like screening at the Alamo Draft House where everyone has to come dressed as Cameron Mitchell. These things get celebrated now instead of this kind of weird packaging and just shove them on the air type stuff.
No, I still think this would be like the Masters of Horror of the Night, and you'd get like six of these on one package in a gas station. Yeah,
the important thing is that it'll still be shown at the Alamo Drafthouse as if it counts as a good movie.
Why you got to dig on the Alamo Drafthouse?
They've been in some trouble recently. I just, you know, it's been fun to watch the media stuff. And also because there isn't one nearby. Fuck you, Alamo Drafthouse. Get in here. I want to go to one of your weird movie showings.
Come on. Get a movie that's like starring Seth Rogen, and everyone who shows up has to be a big, fat, weird beardo. And then, then we'll be in there. We'll be in there like Flynn.
I hate that shit. I used to look so much like Seth Rogen, and that was when I was working at a Trader Joe's, and I had all these people who would get mad at me because I wasn't him. Like, literally, John, I think you were there once. We went to a birthday thing at a
restaurant.
Joe's Crab Shack.
Yeah.
And some waiter dropped what he was doing, like literally put his shit down on an empty table and came running over to our table.
Yep.
And by the time he got there, he was disappointed because I wasn't Seth Rogen.
Yeah. It was like, oh my God. And he like comes running over. And then as he gets closer to the table, the realization dawns on him. And he's like,
oh, you're not Seth Rogen. And I was like, nope, sure I am not. And he was like, oh, damn, you even sound like him.
Weed.
I have an idea for a weed movie. It's me smoking weed. Also, I guess James Franco is there.
All right. Yeah, we've dithered long enough. We're going to have some music. We'll be right back with a full review of The Night Train to Terror.
He's leaving. Said he's going back to a simpler place and time.
And we are back with more Night Train to Terror.
Yeah, it's coming up after Night Train to Terror.
Time to really figure this out.
And after this, of course, as our pledge drive continues, we're going to be listening to some balalaikan string music that's just awful. Over to you, John.
The Night Train to Terror is a movie where God and the devil are on a train, and the train has a rock band on it, and the rock band is doing the same song over and over for hours.
Well, it's the same footage. Like, they show us the same footage of the rock band doing its little rock song three times.
Now, the train that they're on isn't a, like, metaphorical train. This isn't, like, the train to the afterlife and it's full of already dead people. This is a for-reals train that's going to crash.
It's supposed to be a train to Las Vegas, because at one point someone asks when they'll get to Las Vegas, and the kind of night porter, or whatever he calls himself, says, like, in about an hour.
Yeah.
So it's a train to Vegas, and there's a bunch of, like, early 80s outfitted dance-around type...
Oh, yeah. I mean, this is
kid musicians.
This is your rock, like, quotations, rock band that is... looks like they're all ready to start jazzercising. They're all in like leotards and those off-the-shoulder sweaters and leg warmers.
The lead singer in his yellow pullover with a blue ripped-up sweater over that, wearing like Zubas with leg warmers on them.
Oh yeah, it is peak 80s in this train.
Yeah, it's everyone is 80s-ing as hard as they can, and there's like 30 of them in there.
Now, okay, I can almost understand. You've got your band, you've got your backup dancers that you need for the performance. Maybe, I don't know, the roadies are dressed up and they're hanging out with you in this place too.
Mm-hmm.
You've got a shitload of people together. Now, the problem I have with it is these train cars have apparently just been completely stripped out and then loaded down with like backgrounds and vases and
yeah, they've been scooped out like a mom's bagel, and in exchange it's a bunch of like stuff that would indicate that they filmed these interstitial scenes in an old lady's house.
Yeah, like the main singer guy is doing his white guy breakdancing
for like 5 minutes.
And in the background, it's just like a plate hanging on a wall
and
a very nice chair.
A lovely chair with an excellent antique vase on it. A bunch of silhouettes that Aunt Gertrude did back in the 1830s, and we'll never throw those away. Oh, no.
And it's all on hardwood floors. I'm just sitting there going like, what fucking train car is this?
Well, it's a train car that also looks like an early Whitney Houston video on the inside. Just a bunch of like things that dancers can dance around and between.
Yeah, when it first started, I thought this actually was the metaphorical train to the afterlife, and they were all dead, and they were just hanging out jamming in this like, train. Like, that would almost make sense.
It was a bunch of rock band kids that had never seen the inside of a train, so when they died and they imagined a train for themselves, they just turned it into, like, the set of Rent.
Yeah, they were like, oh, we're in a train, but this train is basically just, I don't know, Kids in America, the music video as a train.
Yeah, so the song is called You Ain't Got Nowhere to Go or something like that.
Got Nothing to Do.
Anyway,
or
it sounds exactly like the song from Pod People. Like, you know, if you know what I'm talking, the Mystery Science Theater episode, that's probably the best Mystery Science Theater episode of all time.
Yes.
At least according to John.
It is my favorite.
It's John's favorite. I'm a little more torn between Space Mutiny and Werewolf.
Which is, that's fine. Those are all very good.
they're all up near the very, very top.
But this is straight up just them dancing around and you're like, hideous control now.
My sister's got a fish in her pocket. My sister's ready to go.
Yeah, it is. It's real awful. And then we finally managed to get to, after 5 minutes of this, God and Satan sitting in a train car, and the two of them just mugging at each other.
So, Satan is your classic movie Satan. He's an old man in a suit, clean-shaven, devilish smile sort of thing going on.
Yeah.
He looks fine. God is just every Donald Sutherland movie for the past 20 years. John, the face dawning on his face as he realizes I'm right.
He's 100% accurate. That is just before his time, Donald Sutherland. Donald Sutherland saw that and went, that's the look I want.
That's all I need to do to keep being relevant.
Yeah.
I've made a kefir, just like you're supposed to.
Yeah.
And now I shall grow a big white nimbusy beard and stand around looking important in the background of things.
Yeah, no. he watched Night Train to Terror and was like, that's it. That's what I need. This is your coven, Marvin Sutherland. You know that look you've been looking for?
That weird beard you've been hoping to grow?
Oh, good Lord. So they're trying to divvy up the souls that I guess are supposed to be on this train, but I don't know that they actually are.
I think they're just supposed to be meeting as they often do in order to divvy up souls. Like, not any, like all the souls at once or anything. You know, I assume that, you know, with the rate of death on Earth, you know, 10, 15,000 people die a minute or some crazy thing. Like, they're probably, there's a whole lot of metaphorical soul handling going on in the background, but they like to meet for special cases.
Yeah, I guess this is ones where they're like, oh, there are plenty where it's a open and shut case.
Yeah.
And then, and sometimes they gotta meet and be like, let's have an arbitration over whether this person goes to heaven or hell.
Yeah, sometimes some crimes go slipping through the cracks.
Yeah, but these two deity shoes.
Deity shoes. That's one of my favorite Billy Joel songs.
Deity shoes is a great Christmas time song.
I was in line behind this little kid, and he had a pair of deity shoes.
My mama needs these deity shoes.
Oh, man, I love that music video. Unfortunately, there's nothing left to say about it that Patton Oswalt didn't already get to.
Yeah. So
that's okay, though. We still have the Always video by Erasure to talk about for forever, don't we, John?
Oh, my God.
Sometime later.
Let's not.
I know. Let's push forward. Anyway, they're sitting in a train car that has a lighted table in it for some reason.
I'm loving that.
Yeah.
Satan's got himself a pack of smokes and playing cards that he's just dicking around with.
Yeah, he does a couple of extremely bad magic tricks.
He's like, yeah, I pulled a card out of this deck. And you're like, okay.
All right,
he's like, that was the trick.
That was the whole trick. Watch this, I'll fan some cards.
Okay, great.
All right,
thanks, Satan.
Good job. But the two of them are sitting in a train car, and they're having... Let me just say this about this movie. I've seen a lot of Mystery Science Theater.
Yeah.
So, in fact, I've seen all of it.
Yeah.
So, to me, this is very, like, early Burt I. Gordon or Roger Corman-type 50s cheapies, where you open the movie with some guy with a beard saying some things that sound vaguely scientific.
Yeah.
Or you cut to that guy right away after showing some kids dancing around to the hot rock and roll music that kids want, and really linger in on the butts. Like, that is every 60s movie that was cheaply packaged and put on the air. Like, that's what Monster of Go-Go is. That's all those movies are just like, look, kids are dancing. Yeah, dancing kids.
That'll get the kids in here. And then once we've got them hooked.
Yeah, then we'll cut to some guy and he's like, hello, the tale you're about to hear is most true. I am a scientist. My field of study? Communicating with the dead. That, in this case, you get God and the devil, but it's the same shit. It's so weirdly old-fashioned for an 80s movie.
Yeah, for an 80s movie, this seems far older than what the release date would have you believe.
I mean, I'm going to go ahead and say it, that I'm pretty sure that all three of the movies that they cut to are from like 1980 or so.
Yeah, there's at least one that gives us a time frame, which is 1979 for one of them.
Yeah, so they're older. But anyway, God and the Devil.
So they are trying to decide, and that's our framing mechanism, is them deciding the cases of people.
Yeah, while the conductor of the train comes walking in, who I guess he's in on what's happening.
Yeah, because both him and, like, the night porter guy who is walking through where the kids are all like,
yes, we'll be arriving in 1 hour. We'll be dead on time.
The night porter who's walking through the rock music videos very clearly has been choreographed into them.
Yeah.
Because he's doing this slow zombie walk and even has some zombie makeup on for, like, no good reason.
Yeah, like, he turns at one point and has, like, red eyes or some shit.
Yeah, but the kids are all dancing perfectly choreographed around his slow, careful walk. Like, you know, the director had just seen the Thriller video and was like, well, let's put that in there.
All right, well, that's what the kids want.
The kids want to see, like, an old black man. All right, we can give them that.
We got that.
How are they going to do the show without him later? Like, how are they going to do the show at all? They're like, all right, coming up on stage, a bunch of kids who have a perfectly choreographed routine for a room that is 8 feet wide.
Oh, yeah. They're going to have a big auditorium area where they can go throughout this whole stage, and they are going to be confined to a space that is about the size of a train car.
And they need an old man to slowly walk through for the dance to work.
Yeah. We need a volunteer from the audience. Do we have an old man in the audience that wants to walk through?
Also, isn't perturbed by our hipping and hopping? Well, I'm okay with your hipping and hopping, but your bipping and bopping is quite troubling to me.
Ah, yes. Well, we'll need to find someone else then.
So this conductor kind of is introducing the stories to God and the Devil.
And we've really kind of dithered around getting into the main crux of this, which is the stories. But it's going to be real hard to discuss this. The first one is...
Oh, it is like interconnected dream sequences.
Oh, yeah. It feels like someone was trying to edit a movie and accidentally, like, fell asleep on the keyboard and just cut random bits.
Boy, we definitely missed the ending of it. Like, God and the Devil have to tell us what happens in the end.
Yeah, this happens, I think, at least twice.
The first two, because they dedicate more time to the third film.
Yeah, the first one is a guy is...
A drunk
driver with his wife and, like, goes over a bridge and then goes into an asylum where they drug him and brainwash him to go on Tinder dates and bring people back to the asylum?
Yeah. Okay, so let me see if I can sum this up. Let me give you a through line of the film. Drunk driver accidentally kills wife by driving car over bridge. Wife is dead. Man shows up in random insane asylum that is run by corrupt officials. Corrupt officials brainwash him into a silent killer who uses a perfectly invisible poison to kidnap young blonde women who will be tied up in the asylum and have their boobs exposed by Richard Mall. he then eventually will kill and strangle them. The man who is ostensibly the main character is the one who's kidnapping all the women. He has no redeeming features because he spends the entire thing brainwashed until the very end when he breaks free and kills everybody.
Yeah, the whole thing with this, the fact that this would have been, let's say, an hour and a half movie that they cut down to like 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Is we get the beginning of this guy where he's just an asshole drunk driver. Then he's drugged up and doesn't really say anything or do anything particular. And then at the very end manages to break out and everyone dies. So we have a main character we don't know or care about.
No, we don't like him.
We probably get more screen time with fucking Richard Mall than we do anyone else.
So Richard Mall plays, you know Richard Mall, that's Bull from Night Court.
Yeah, well, I don't know if you would know Bull from Night Court, but
okay,
boy howdy, go look him up.
I'm old, I admit it, I remember Night Court.
Good job.
I was a little kid when Night Court was on the air, and I didn't watch it for Bull, I watched it for the magician Harry Anderson. So did you, you lying sack of shit.
Nah, I watched it for Bull.
Wait, none of us were watching it for Lyra Kett?
Nah, man.
I feel like you have to age into Lyra Kett.
Yeah.
His performance was not meant for little kids.
No way. I was like, look at that huge lurch-looking motherfucker. This is great.
Oh, he's so friendly, but so dumb. But anyway, Bull is kind of like the Marina Sirtis of Night Court. In that Marina, you know her, she's Troy from... She had a huge B-movie career where she got, like, raped. She was, like, in the Death Wish movies and stuff, getting, like, raped with her top off and shit, before she managed to make it into TNG, which she always referred to as her kind kind of safe haven of employment.
Yeah.
Well, Bull's sort of the same way, or Richard Mall. He's in a million shitty B-horror movies.
And in fact, he's in two out of the three of these.
Yeah, he's one of two people who shows up twice in these things. But he plays Otto, a man wearing a black wife beater who just sort of generically brutalizes and murders the women in random ways.
Yeah, the way that this movie is cut up, we just get a little shot of our main character guy meets some girl, and then it cuts to that girl with her top open on a slab,
mm-hmm.
then gets killed, then cuts to another shot of him, like, going somewhere else, and it's just over and over with this, and we don't really, until the very end, even understand what's going on. Like, why would an asylum be like, oh, you know what we need to do? Is kill a bunch of ladies.
Well, they even explain it. The thing about this movie is it's so badly cut apart that they needed a narrator to explain what's going on all the way through it. And at the end, when they explain what's happening, it's just like, of course, they needed this brainwashed man to kidnap these women so that they could rape these women and then cut apart the women to sell the body parts for money.
Yeah, okay.
I don't feel like that would make as much money as just running an insane asylum full of doctors.
Yeah, the idea that somehow selling body parts to medical schools is making you a shitload of money is... It seems like a bad business plan, one.
It definitely seems like a bad business plan.
Because you're definitely murdering people.
Medical schools don't want random chunks of murdered people.
No, there's not... Like, when we see it, it's, oh, I sawed some lady's leg off. And you're like, okay, no one wants that.
No one wants a leg. What are you doing?
Like, oh, maybe...
Welcome to medical school. Day three, legs.
Yeah, no.
Everyone skips leg day, bro.
If you were selling cadavers, then sure, there are places that need some cadavers.
Yeah, and even then, they don't really pay for them. They wait for people to donate.
Yeah. At that point, I was like, you may as well get just, like, do the whole we're going to take homeless people or whatever and then sell them.
Yeah, I mean...
Because the idea that you would brainwash a guy that you need to keep brainwashed...
All the time, like with regular injections.
Yeah, and then send him out to hopefully drug, like, date rape drug some lady to bring back to here.
Yeah, he has to seduce ladies and trick them into going to the asylum, at which point they wake up naked and tied to a bed.
Yeah, it just seems very roundabout. Now, maybe we missed something in the fact that this was cut down to, like, a 15-minute short.
Yeah, it could very well be. Anyway, that's pretty much everything that happens. The cast of characters that we haven't mentioned in it yet are a bunch of random women, several of whom were willing to have their tops taken off.
Yep.
A sadistic, evil old doctor, a sadistic, younger, sexy lady doctor who tries to seduce our hero, even though he's brainwashed.
Yeah, she's like, oh, I'm going to turn this brainwashed dude into my sex slave.
And then a random white-bearded cop policeman investigator sort of character who is in two scenes and doesn't do anything.
Yeah, that was great. It was like he took someone from a bar, and then the other guy who was at that bar was like, hey, my friend went missing, and I think the car that took her was registered here. And then he sees her in some asylum room and is like, okay, then, goodbye.
Yeah, she's like super catatonic, and he's like, well, nothing I can do then. All right, goodbye.
Also, that's weird, because every other person that they have gotten kidnapped by this dude, they cut apart and, like, murdered immediately, but for some reason, this lady, they're like, nah, let's leave her alive just in case.
Yeah, I don't know. I assume that in the actual movie, they end up killing off that old man, too, but they just don't bother. Anyway, everyone dies. The evil doctor, old doctor, is lobotomized by the evil young doctor. The dude falls out of his brainwashing and tricks the lobotomized evil old doctor into open heart surgery, killing the younger sexy doctor. Bull gets his head cut off with a sword.
Yeah,
one of them surgical swords you see in medical schools.
Yeah, you know that the surgical machete that you need.
It's a surgical grade machete. You have to take it out of the plastic wrapper first and then put it in the autoclave when you're done.
Yeah,
yeah. It's one of those.
One of them.
And then it cuts. That's all over. We cut back to God and the Devil. And God and the Devil are like, the Devil's like, I want that guy. He killed a lot of women. And God's like, you can't have him. He's on my side.
He was only doing it because he was brainwashed. After this experience, he went and didn't do anything anymore.
He's mine. Which is weird because it's kind of a running theme in these, is that the Devil wants some central character, and God's just like, no. And I guess we're supposed to be like, that's a victory for God. Hell yeah. Except you're like, I don't fucking care.
The fucking conductor at this point is just like, how about 100 years of purgatory? That's a nice compromise. And they're like, yeah, sure, why not?
Sure, who are you? Anyway, yeah, that's fine. Whatever.
Yeah, great, whatever. Although, for the devil, that's not a compromise. It's, oh, you mean God has to wait 100 years to get his soul?
And I
don't give a shit.
And I don't get a piece of him at any point?
No, that's garbage. That's not a compromise. That's just like, oh, can I annoy God slightly? All right, fine.
I'm at least appreciative that this appears to be sort of a very indeterminate God in terms of, you know, worship requirements or asking for absolution of sins or anything.
Oh, yeah.
There's no point where he's like, well, that guy did kill a bunch of people, but then he recanted, I guess, but not to me specifically. There was no point where he prayed for forgiveness.
Also, before he got turned into a weird, murdered, Tinder zombie, he was an awful person.
Yeah, but I'll still take him. I mean, I was kind of hoping for like a deathbed recant, you know, like I accept Jesus into my heart. Ta-ding, I'm good. At that point, though, if you had that worked into the story, then the whole God the devil sitting around arguing would be a completely pointless exercise because the devil would be sitting there going, I hate that fucking loophole.
That's such bullshit.
It's just complete bullshit. You can live your whole life as a dumb piece of horrible shit.
Second story is
even almost more convoluted.
Like, I can't even begin to wrap my mind around second story.
I'll give you the quick rundown of it again. There's a woman selling popcorn at a local carnival when an old man named Richard Youngmeyer arrives, and she asks him if he will buy popcorn, and he says, I don't need popcorn, and she says, well, you gonna stand up and buy popcorn, or are you gonna fall flat?
How when you're at the carnival and you go by and someone's like, hey, you want some cotton candy? And you're like, I don't know. And then they start making fun of you.
Yeah, they kind of tell you that you're impotent because you aren't buying enough popcorn.
Hey, limp dick, you want some popcorn or what?
And he responds by putting $400 down her shirt and then wanders off with her. At this point, we get the narrator popping in to say that this young woman, Greta, by the way, because it's the cases of, in order, Harry Billings, Greta something.
Garbo.
And Claire is the third one. But Greta goes with him, and the narrator pops in to be like, Greta had always desired to be famous, and Richard Youngmeyer gave her what she wanted. He made her famous in stag films.
Oh, no.
And we see her in a stag film where she's dressed as an extremely old-fashioned Indian and an extremely old-fashioned cowboy porn man tears off all her clothes.
Yeah, it's like some like trapper-looking guy who's got the whole like skins and nonsense going on.
And it's old-school like 8mm, let's watch this in a basement style porn stag reels.
Oh, yeah.
So we're panning across like a bunch of horny dudes, and then it centers on the obvious handsome one. And then the narrator pops back up, and he's like, this young man was just stopping by his old fraternity for a beer. He did not expect to watch a stag film, but on doing so, he fell in love with the young woman and had to have her for himself.
Oh, yeah. At this point, he's like, he tries to find out where she lives and eventually goes to, like, Youngmeyer's studio in order to find this girl. I'm like, you're a creep.
You're a creepy piece of shit. Leave porn actors alone.
Yeah, I don't care how much you're like, oh, wow, that porn actress is super hot. No.
I can see the real her. When she's getting railed, I can tell that she's, like, deep and doesn't really want to get railed, but she would want to get railed by me, though.
Oh, my God.
Lady, I'm ready to be the only man who sees your secret junk.
I am ready to take off this disguise and become Captain Save-A-Ho.
Oh, God damn it. And right there, the movie's like, this is our hero, everybody. And I'm like, no, he isn't. If he was a hero, he'd recognize that porn actors are doing porn and you should leave them alone.
Yeah, I mean, even in this, it's not like, oh yeah, she was drugged into doing this.
Nope, she liked it.
She was like, oh, this is my life.
This is good. I'm fine with this. People are buying me things. I'm a dumb idiot. This is great. This is exactly what I wanted.
I get a shitload of money, and I get to play the piano, which is apparently a thing that I wanted to do.
Yeah, so we'll play a little funny mini piano. A
little mini piano.
But it looks like she's fucking Schroeder. Look, and that shot of her playing the piano in her underwear that has like the regular room lighting is not a good looking shot. Like that scene look like a last known video. But because we have to cut the movie apart, at this point, it just goes, he dedicated himself to finding this porno lady. Next shot. Now they are dating.
Oh, yeah. It's like he finds her at some club where she's playing the piano and he sits there and watches her. And then it just cuts to they're in a relationship now. And you're like, the fuck just happened?
It cuts to a sex scene. And then, okay, so at this point, they go to the carnival together where Richard Youngmeyer shows up again. And he's like, he kind of beckons to her with a ring or something. And she's like, yeah, I have to take my hand out of your hand, handsome hunk who rescued me from porn.
Because this guy's actually got money.
Because this guy has some money. At which point, Richard Youngmeyer reveals his insane circuitous plan to take revenge out on the hunk dude.
But we only know that the revenge wants to happen again by the narrator, who's like, yes, and Youngmeyer couldn't stand the fact that our hero had gotten some of his property and he planned to take revenge. But
you guys, I saw the whole movie. I'll describe to you the parts that you're missing.
Yeah, his revenge, though, I don't know that that's actually a thing that he's trying to do in the movie, because what it is he has a weird, like, death club.
Yeah, he's a member of what, I mean, the whole movie, I would be willing to bet that it's cut from a film that was called Death Club.
Yeah.
That where basically there's like six people in there, and you can only be a member of Death Club if you have recently almost experienced death.
Yeah, everyone with near-death experiences, but childhood doesn't count.
And the members of Death Club are hilarious. There's an insane Germany, sort of maybe Polish man who's just laughing at everything and always has a gun out.
There's the Countess, who is one of the other people besides Youngmeyer in charge of this, who's always very prim and proper and in charge of everything.
There's a black guy dressed up as a blaxploitation 70s martial artist whose name is Prince Flubutu.
Sigh.
So, just so you know, that's in there.
Yeah.
So, somehow, the girlfriend, or Greta, manages to convince our hunk hero to join Death Club, and the first thing that happens is the Death Club announces that they have a death event for the night. A big, weird, ant-beetle-y thing whose sting is death.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, if it's your first time at Death Club, you've got a death.
Yeah, and you can't talk about death.
Yeah.
So they put this big glass jar on the table, which contains a claymation ant bee with glowing red eyes.
This is going to be a recurring thing for this, and the next one is just the world's shittiest claymation.
So eventually, after like mugging on and on about how dangerous this thing is and how once they open the jar, they have to...
They left the window open because this thing, like Russian roulette, there's got to be a chance that it won't kill any of them.
So everyone has to hold still or they'll draw the attention of the death sting ant bee.
Yeah.
But it's so funny because the Polish guy keeps making the Russian roulette references and he keeps saying, just as in Russian roulette, you have to leave one of the chambers open so that there's a chance you don't die. And we're like, no, man, you leave five of the chambers open.
Yeah, the whole point is that there is a chance that you die, not an almost guaranteed chance that you die, and maybe you don't.
How have you been playing Russian roulette this far and made it so far, dude? You keep rolling sixes.
Man, you are just the luckiest sumbitch in the world.
Leave one chamber open, and then five of us will definitely die.
So... So it does fly out the window and then just murder some random couple humping in a park somewhere.
Yeah, there's a couple out in a park and the woman gets her bra out. And then the bee lands on the dude's face and stings him and his face explodes into her face.
Yeah, his face swells and, of course, this is all just shitty claymation. His eye explodes out and that blows up onto her face with blood.
Yeah, it goops her face real good.
Yeah, goops it up.
Yeah, if there were foot-long ant bees with mega stings, then I think we'd know about them. Anyway, at this point, I guess they decide to go to another evening of Death Club?
Well, the weird accented dude shows up at the guy's house with a gun to force him to go to another one?
Yeah, to the second night of Death Club. So the second night of Death Club, they are playing a giant video game machine.
Yeah, they are playing the death version of, I guess, musical chairs.
And something has happened to Greta, the girlfriend, by this scene.
I don't think that's the same person. I think that was someone else.
Well, at this point, there is now a young woman member of Death Club who is dressed in a man's suit, has short hair, and I don't know what she's doing there.
No, but she's just laughing at everything.
But she also is consistently and regularly touching our hero, which is why I thought that she was just Greta with a haircut.
I don't think so.
I could have sworn that there's probably a scene where she gets a haircut, or, because we never see her again.
Oh, we do. She shows up again at the last Death Club.
Oh, does? Okay, fine. So it must just be someone else. Anyway, there's a big robot here, and the robot starts talking about itself. It's like, I am the electrocution droid 5000 Deathbot video game machine program simulator death.
Yeah, so it's got three different colors, and like yellow is if I choose you, you get a light shock, and then blue is you get a medium shock, but if I'm red and I choose you, then you get a death shock.
Which is weird because they didn't even say death shock. They just said the ultimate shock.
You get the shocker.
So everyone has to wear a gold headband.
Yep.
The Polish dude's got a gun on our hero so he doesn't leave.
Yep.
And then the machine starts, and it's funny because none of them seem to know what an electric shock is.
No, their reactions to being electrical shocked is just kind of going, oh,
whoa,
hey.
That was a mild one. Instead of, you know, when any kind of shock gets you at all, especially one around your head, which is that every muscle in your body seizes up at the same time at once. And you go, the fuck was that? Every single time.
This is especially egregious when it gets to the red shock.
Yeah, because this is Prince Flabutu's time to die.
Boy, howdy, is it ever. And it begins shocking him and goes on for a while. I guess it needs to amp up, if you will.
It needs to volt up.
It needs the Mars Volta. Wait, hold on.
It's his turn to run the jewels.
Huh? What are you talking about? Hey.
Oh, my.
So he gets zapped with electricity, but his response to begin with is to be like, oh my, yes, I'm being zapped. And then as it gets worse, he turns into a weird claymation thing.
He turns into a puppet of his own face with way too many teeth, which is shaken violently on screen for what, 20 minutes?
It is way too long. Like, they just sit there shaking some weird puppet thing of him over and over, and then it like cuts to a reaction shot. Back to that thing. Shakes for another like 5 minutes, cuts to a reaction shot. And you're like, yeah, we get it.
And I get it. I am like 100% sure that's the same lady now with like a short haircut. I'm like 100% sure.
100.
Anyway, eventually he does die, and we get to see the gross top half of his face having melted off.
Yay. And then
we
like
get the narrator
try,
again. The narrator
we get the
like,
narrator who's like, and then they tried to get the fuck out.
Youngmeyer had other plans, though. He wanted to see this man dead and didn't care how many times it took. At this point, Youngmeyer is a Batman villain.
Yeah, Youngmeyer straight up is like, I want this guy dead, but I can't just kill him. It has to be in one of my weird death traps.
He can only die if there's an even chance that five other people might also die.
Including me.
I mean, literally, that is a Batman villain. You could have a Batman villain named like Russian Roulette.
Oh, yeah.
Who has that as their thing. Like, one of the six people in this room tonight will die, and he keeps wanting to kill Batman, but Batman's always just one of the six people in the room.
Yeah. And he's like, God damn it, I killed one of my henchmen again. Son of a bitch!
How many Robins do you have? Damn it!
I've got an entire Batcave full of them.
This is the late 2010s, which means that there's like 17,000 of them. They're a gang now. But I mean, literally, that is a great idea for a Batman villain, is some dude who's obsessed with Russian roulette and can only kill a person if there's an even chance that five other people might die.
Yeah, well, and there's always one that is nobody dies.
Yeah, there's always a chance of nobody dying as well. But basically, he has to unveil his latest death potential trap, which is, this time he's involved himself. He unveils a construction ball, you know, the big heavy construction ball.
One of them wrecking balls.
That you only ever see in, like, Looney Tunes, which I think the movie understood, because he talks about what it is for, like, forever.
Ha! You know, a construction ball, also known as a wrecking ball. It is 975 pounds and 8 ounces. And it just goes on and on and on about this thing.
Yeah, just endlessly talking. This is, as you may or may not know, is a construction ball. And I wanted everyone to be like, yeah, yeah, everyone knows what a construction ball is. It's 1985. We've all seen friggin' Wile E. Coyote. everyone knows. Why else would you have a giant heavy ball suspended from the ceiling?
Yeah, and the entire death trap is it's on a rope, and it's going to spin around in like a circle, and every time it goes around the like left side of it, there is a saw there that cuts a little bit into the rope.
Yeah. Now everyone is lying down in the path where it will smash their head in sleeping bags.
Yeah, which, all right, I don't know what that's for, but
although,
sure.
Although, again, the Polish guy has the sleeping bag pointed in such a fashion that it, or he has it, his gun out so he can point it at the hero.
Yeah.
So it goes forever. It's hilarious because it's a static saw, like an old-fashioned saw you'd use for two lumberjacks to cut down a tree.
Yes.
But every time they pass by the saw, it makes a power saw noise.
Yeah, I think it's supposed to be doing some sort of, like, vibrating saw thing, but it's just a static saw blade.
It's just a blade, but every time we pass by, it goes, meow,
vroom,
over and over again, just lightsaber. Ooga.
Yeah, it just turns into a car.
Yeah, so it's Turbo Teen. I eventually it cuts the rope, but it kills the Countess.
Yeah.
And that's the end.
And it ends there. Like, the ball smashes the Countess's head, and then we just cut, fade to God and Satan, and there's the narration from them who's like, oh yes, the two of them then lived happily ever after. And you're like, what?
They got away from young Meyer, they lived happily ever after. Duh. That's all.
Anyway, no need to show it. We're done here. They're mine.
Well, no, young Meyer didn't die. He's right in the room with them. There are guns trained on both of them. What are you talking about?
I love that. I love the fact that they decided to cut these entire movies down to like 20 minutes because it means every time that the narration comes up, I'm like, how?
Well, this one in particular, like if you're cutting down a horror movie, you show the fucking end. You don't go, yeah, it's good enough. You saw 5 minutes. Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, turn it off. Turn it off.
Someone died. Whatever. We're done.
Yeah, we had a gross head flattening. That's all. That's what kids wanted. No, back to God the Devil.
Yep, that's it.
The Devil and Daniel Sutherland, as it's known.
And, yeah, so God's like, nah, they're mine. And the devil's like, but she was a porn actress and he was a creepo and then they both were in weird death cult. Why am I not getting them? And God's just like, fuck you, buddy.
Yeah, and there's no point where they do anything heroic. Either of them ever do anything heroic. She's consistently happy. There's one scene where she gets any lines at all in this entire movie is her going, yeah, some guy bought me a piano because I fucked him. I liked it. I'd do it again. And it's just like, okay, so your only agency is fucking for stuff? That's, you know, I'm not going to judge people who want to do that. That's fine, but you at no point in this movie do you even try to escape the death cult.
No, like she's straight up excited about it every time she's there. She's, yeah, like, yep, it's time for the death cult.
This
it's
is super
great.
Exciting to me. And then at the end, God's just like, no, I get them.
No, it's fine.
Why? They literally didn't do anything heroic, and at the end they just escaped, like air quotes escaped. Fuck you, God. So the devil is probably saying in this situation.
And God just, like, we get a from photo of devil. It's going to him, and it's a bright light, and God just being like, don't make me fuck your shit up.
What are you going to do to me? Like, what, at this point, in standard cosmology, what is God going to do to the devil that he didn't do already?
You know, destroy him. Like, actually destroy him rather than just banish him.
But I'm sure he doesn't give a shit. I'm sure he'd prefer to be destroyed at this stage in the game.
Oh, man. Devil's got a lot of self-preservation.
I guess he does. But he also has a lot of work he's doing.
Well,
you know. That's the important... Like, if you kill the devil at this point in traditional, like, Catholic-y cosmology, who's running hell?
I don't know. I mean, probably one of the many devils.
Because hell's really
down there.
Hell's really important in the standard Catholic cosmology. You need evil soul storage. You can't do without it.
Yeah, well, I mean, if Satan's gone, then you've always got like Beelzebub.
Yeah,
or
I guess you
got to
promote
Scratch.
One of them. Yeah. Lucifer, wait, Lucifer's Satan. We get some other devil. Get up here. Get up here. You're going to the big leagues, buddy.
Melloc or whatever. You're in.
Memnock from that fucking Anne Rice book. Any one of those people. Congratulations. You're getting promoted. Because otherwise, it's like threatening to fire your septic tank.
Shitter's full.
Incidentally, in that first movie, Richard Mall looks exactly like Cousin Eddie from Christmas Vacation.
Which is great, because in the third one, he looks exactly like Mr. Fantastic.
One more thing about him in the first one, by the way. There are shots where it's very clear when it's his stunt double. I don't even think it's his stunt double, because he doesn't do any stunts. I think they just ran out of footage for Richard Mall, and they had to use another guy with his haircut, because there are scenes where his arms are either hairy or smooth. And it's really obvious. Anyway, so God and the Devil decide to discuss, after we watch another 5 minutes of the same music video being done in the car down the road by all these band kids, and for some reason, at this point, I started noticing all the lighting equipment and boom mics and shit that's just hanging in the frame, like they just didn't give a fuck at all during these filming sequences.
No. So
the third story.
Yeah, the third story is what they take the most time on,
mm-hmm.
and it is, like, it's
a hyper-convoluted tale of the son of Satan.
Yeah, so I guess the way that the movie sort of frames it is that there's a very devout wife who has a dream about Nazis, and one of the Nazis is some guy who looks kind of like a vampire.
Yeah, there's a vaguely vampire-y Nazi. There's a bunch of Nazis having just some party, and for some reason the party is being, like, performed at by a all-women's string octet.
And, yeah.
And they're all wearing nurses' uniforms.
They get killed, and it's like, I'm a bad guy, even for Nazis.
Yeah, some extra Nazi comes into the room where the Nazi party is, and is like, "Der Führer has told me that you have not met your quota." And then he shoots all the women, and goes, "Your quota is met." And leaves, and it's like, what the fuck was the quota? You have to kill 8 German violinists?
Yeah, you hadn't met that quota yet.
You guys forgot to do that. How are we going to complete the entire Christmas song? You know Hitler likes the part about the 5 golden rings. Who are you are to put in a gas chamber. What the fuck was... Anyway.
And then we get an old Jewish guy who is like, this is the dude. This is the dude from Nazi times that I've been trying to find.
He killed my family. Except the Jewish dude is so playing old. Like, he's not really an old man. He's playing old.
Oh, yeah. It is very obviously some guy with the shittiest old man makeup ever.
And when he plays old as in completely indecipherable, muttering weirdo.
Yeah.
So all of his scenes are like, he's a president of my family. Alabama, spare some change.
Alabama, Alabama.
Yeah, it's conveniently located near Alabama. But, okay, so the old Jewish man goes to investigate some hotel, and the same Nazi dude comes out, except now he has the dumbest haircut in the world. He looks like Hecubus from the Kids in the Hall videos.
True.
Yeah. And he has what's supposed to be an evil, smug smile on his face in all shots from him from this day forward. But it is exactly the smile when you first start pooping.
I don't know that I'm going to be able to follow you on that one. I don't think I'm ever like, when I start pooping.
You've never had that brief moment of like,
I'm not like... Like a baby who's just shitting in a diaper. I'm not just like, oh, he's smiling. No, that's gas.
Man, poops are satisfying if you're doing them right. You must be doing it wrong.
Nah, man. I'm there to do business and leave. I have a stoic 1,000-yard stare when I go to poop.
You're like a fucking cat.
I'm just sitting there like,
Because you see that cat sticking its head out of the litter box when
and just making eye contact with you?
It's just doing nothing. It's just, I'm all back end right now. So what we're saying is that there was like a customs official at your bathroom and they asked you if you're there for business or pleasure.
And I was like, business only.
I am only here for business. I will take no pleasure in this moment.
There is no pleasure in this dumping. There is only what needs to be done.
Well, I'm going
to
tell you, that's a big difference between you and me then, because there's a moment where pooping makes me smile like the son of Satan every single time. I'm just kind of like, yeah. Oh.
Oh, yes.
Sweet release.
Oh, my. Is that filth coming out of the back of me? Ooh.
Yes, that's right. I go all hedonism.
Yeah, 100%.
Jambi, the toilet paper. You know the type I like. Rough and crusty. One ply, please.
Yeah. I just want to get it all over my hands.
I like it when my fingers poke through immediately.
Yep.
All right.
There's pooping habits with John and Jeff.
This episode's going to be way too long, and I'm not cutting any of this.
So, the whole movie is basically the the fact that the son of Satan is just walking around while people are trying to be like, hey, you're a bad guy. And he's like, meh.
Yes, I call myself Olivier now, and I always have two women on my side.
Good day.
That's all.
And then Mr. Papini shows up. And
So the Jewish guy seeks out the help of a police officer who comes to the Jewish guy's house. And the police officer is known B-movie film actor Cameron Mitchell. You would know him probably, if you're a Mystery Science Theater person, you would know him as the Santa Claus-looking captain of the Southern Sun in Space Mutiny.
Yep.
But you would also know him as being in about 50 other really shitty old B movies in various states of health. There are several movies where Cameron Mitchell is so ill that he acts entirely in a chair and has no lines.
Ugh.
But here he is as some sort of detective.
Yep.
Who's just mad at this Jewish guy for calling him at all.
Yeah, he's like, okay, you found this Nazi guy, but we can't arrest him for being a Nazi unless he does a thing.
But I tell you, he killed my family! Well, there's no way he did!
That was Germany, and this is America, and we can't arrest him for that. And I'm like, you know, if you can prove he was a Nazi, you kind of can.
Yeah, you could definitely do that. There's still war crime stuff for that.
Yeah.
You could have him hauled into a tribunal.
You could do that.
That's a thing.
But whatever.
Instead, the Jewish guy decides to go investigate on his own. We get a brief flash of a Nosferatu-looking vampire puppet face, and then the back of the Jewish guy's chest explodes.
Yeah, which we then get like an autopsy scene later, and it's just that he got beat up. I'm like, well, what happened to the back of his chest? Like, wouldn't that be a thing you would mention?
Also, a big meaty squib went off in the back of his jacket.
It didn't kill him or nothing. He just had a squib back there.
Turned out he was wired for his job that day as old man gets shot in a Death Wish movie. And the punches set off the squib.
Yeah,
he gets punched a bunch, and it shows that he has two tattoos. A concentration camp tattoo, and the numbers 666 branded in a circle on him. And they say, that tattoo was done today.
Da-da-da.
It's like, no fucking way. I've seen a tattoo that was done today, and it doesn't look like that. It looks like gross infected shit for the first week and a half. Anytime anyone's like, hey man, I just got this tattoo. You want to see it? And it still has any kind of plastic on it? You say no.
Nah, man, because this is a Satan tattoo. It just goes on smooth.
Well, then it doesn't look like a tattoo that they got today. And that CSI guy has seen a lot of Satan tattoos.
He's like, look, I did a quick reading of the timeline of this tattoo. I took it to the lab because some old guy died, and obviously we were going to do that.
So basically, this movie has two completely separate storylines. So we have to talk about the other one, where Richard Mall...
where Mr. Fantastic doesn't believe in God anymore.
So basically, poor Richard Mall is forced to deliver a TV special where he basically like, thank you for joining me on my television special. I have bad news, and I'm afraid that it's up to me to give you the bad news, and you won't like this bad news, but it is important that I give you the bad news. You see, there is no reference to Jesus anywhere in the New Testament that is not a forgery, and he is certainly never referred to at all whatsoever in the Old Testament, except for a single mention in Josephus, which some experts claim is a forgery. Therefore, because Jesus was not mentioned in the Old Testament, God is dead. And if the Abrahamic Christian religion's God is dead, so too must all other religions' gods be dead.
Yeah, I love his thing that even if you're like, yo, I found evidence that Jesus was just a thing that they made up and that was it. He's like, oh, well, because of that, literally no religion is actually real.
He also one of his other arguments was the word Christ is not a name, but a title.
You're like, yeah, no shit.
Everyone knows that.
Yeah, no one thinks his name is actually Jesus H. Christ.
So basically, he has like some atheismo 101 bullshit that he just kind of like. I'm not saying atheism is bullshit, but the argument he's using is straight out of central atheism casting.
Yeah, so he puts out a book called God is Dead.
Which, incidentally, I find it amazing that he doesn't think that God doesn't exist, but rather that God has died.
Well, God is Dead, being the reference to Nietzsche and all,
fair,
is a way punchier title.
Yeah.
Than so, God's not an actual thing. I mean, what do you want him to call it? The God delusion? That would be terrible. That's like something that would be released by Dick Dorkins.
Please stop calling me Dick Dorkins. So he puts out a book called God is Dead, which of course has a black cover with red gothic-y Nazi font on it.
Yeah.
That scene where he has to be like, and because Jesus didn't exist, it of course stands to reason that every other religion must also be false. And I was like, well, okay, that really doesn't track.
Your logic is flawed,
and,
sir.
And not only that, but wouldn't Jesus not being a really big deal not be an argument for the death of the Christian God, but just for the rise of the Jewish one?
Yeah.
Like if Jesus was just a cool dude and maybe not the Messiah? It sounds like you're just advocating Judaism.
It's like, all of you Christians need to be Jews!
Okay, well, therefore God is dead! Okay.
What?
You're not making... But he's like a big-time rich dude for this idea.
Oh, yeah. Well, he was already, like, a big deal. He was a Nobel Prize winner.
And and his wife, though, ostensibly the main character of this story, but Lord knows it's hard to prove that, his wife is a talented heart surgeon?
Some kind of doctor?
And they operate out of a huge office building, which must have looked super futuristic in 1980 when they shot this shit, but it's the UCSD Central Library. Like, that is some bullshit.
That is horseshit.
Yeah.
The whole storyline on this is, I guess it's up to this lady to stop the son of Satan because you have to remove his heart and put it in some box because it's the only thing that can contain the evil.
Mm-hmm.
And it's made from the wood of the true cross.
A whole big box made from the wood of the true cross, says some priest. Meanwhile, a Jesus-y looking man who they keep calling a defrocked monk. Named Papini.
Mr. Papini.
Mr. Papini is here to see thee. He brought a panini and also a martini.
It's teeny weeny.
He says you should drink the martini with some blini.
the amount of Papini jokes that went on while we were watching this movie is a lot. I'm almost certain we missed plot points just because we were too busy thinking and spouting Papini jokes.
Oh, man, you're going to let me go? That's the bee's knees, G. Just that kind of terrible shit. Just forever.
I bought you a large pizza with pepperonis.
It also has pepperoncinis. I'm from the island of Santorini. Oh, wait,
Papua,
I'm sorry.
New Guinea.
I'm from Papua New Guinea. Just that for like an hour.
Over and over.
It was the only thing left to keep that we had to tether us to reality. Anyway, he kind of looks like a Jesus or like a Torgo.
Yes. He looks like Jesus or Torgo.
Your choice.
Your dealer's choice on Jesus or Torgo.
Jesus's and Torgos are wild.
One-eyed Torgos.
Unfortunately, he doesn't get a hold of Claire, the main character of the story. He gets a hold of the professor who doesn't believe in God, so he just gets kicked out.
Yeah. He's like, hey, fuck you, buddy.
Eventually, he will die while fighting a claymation demon.
Yeah, this has at least two different claymation fight scenes.
Yeah.
And not only is it we made a big demon out of clay because, you know, it's 1970s and we don't have any sort of budget, so we just made a big clay demon. That's fine. That I am 100% on board with. Sure, do that. But then when it goes to kill a guy, it's like a little clay, like a kindergartner would make version of a man.
It's like a demon killing Mr. Bill.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Like the son of Satan shows up and it's just like, oh, no. Why? Why are you doing this?
Hey, Mr. Bill, the defrocked monk told you had to go in this room. Oh, no, Mr. Bill, there's a huge crazy demon in here. Oh, no.
It's so weird.
It's like, whatever happened to just good old-fashioned rear screen projection?
Yeah.
Where, you know, you act like, you go, oh no, a monster that is much bigger than me. I'm acting up.
Yeah, but no, it's, we're going to squish this tiny clay doll that is just that kind of clay doll that's uniform for its legs and arms.
It's a little tiny clay cowboy, and it's like, after these messages. Oh no, a demon.
Oh, we'll be right back.
Boink.
And then his head rolls away.
And then he learns the true meaning of Christmas.
Yeah. So this happens with Papini. It happens with
a random security guard.
Some guy.
Although one of my favorite scenes is just where Satan, the son of Satan, is hanging out in some ridiculous disco club. He's sitting in a Rosanna Dana giant chair with two women in it with him. And he sees some random bar worker in a nice red dress and decides that that's the woman he'd like to mess with tonight.
Yeah. So he uses his Satan powers and is like, Come here, lady.
And she's like, okay. But then he takes her home where she gets undressed and gets in a bed, and he changes clothes from his nice tuxedo to, like, David Copperfield-style sleepwear.
Oh, yeah. He's in, like, a blousy silver shirt that's just open down the front.
And knee boots. And jodhpurs.
He is definitely ready to saw a woman in half, if yeah. you know what I mean.
I think. Anyway, at this point, he makes a long, convoluted sequence of taking his boots off to reveal, oh no, hooves.
Oh, goodness.
And then the woman freaks out, passes out, wakes up having been thrown out of a car, perfectly fine. Just keep her in your back pocket, because we won't see her again until the last minute of the film. And you won't recognize her when you do. Anyway, some security guard that was there waiting for her when she gets thrown out of the car decides to investigate a random building. He goes into the random building and turns into a little clay man who gets stepped on by a big clay demon.
Yay. He gets... My favorite is when Papini dies with the clay thing, he gets pulled down, like, underground. Mm-hmm. Like, that's his death, is the ground opens up beneath him and
an ant centaur comes out.
Yeah, a clay ant centaur pulls a clay doll under the ground, and then it seals back up. And the police are like, oh, we found him dead. It must have been suicide. And I'm like, oh, yeah, you know how when I go to kill myself and I bury myself 10 feet underground? Yeah, that's the standard suicide.
That's pretty much what I do, is I go out near the old spooky lighthouse, dig a 10-foot deep hole, and then seal myself into the pit.
Yep, that's your standard way to go out.
So, at this point, the movie just goes fucking nuts. The cop, Cameron Mitchell, is now completely convinced that the old Jewish man was right, so he goes to confront Olivier, and he says, hey, did you know a man named Weiss? He was a 70-year-old Jew. It's like, come on, Cameron Mitchell, just say Jewish guy, at least a little bit.
Nah,
man, he was a Jew, and I strongly suspect he was a Polak as well.
The weird thing about this, of just the guy going like, nope, didn't know him, good day, sir, you'd better leave, and then doesn't do anything to him?
No, it doesn't. Cameron Mitchell is just another character to get killed in this film.
Yeah.
So he strongly suspects this Olivier guy and finally goes to his house to raid it. But one of my favorite things is him realizing that the old Jewish man's last words before he died were, look at the walls. Now, Cameron Mitchell's already been in this Jewish guy's house.
Yes.
Which is wallpapered with old news clippings.
Yeah. Now, when Weiss originally is like, hey, I think this is this Nazi guy, mm-hmm. he already has on his wall pictures of this dude going back to, like, the 1890s or something.
Yeah, the Franco-Prussian War in the 1870s. He already has shown this to Cameron Mitchell's character. But halfway, near the end of the scene, Cameron Mitchell goes, when he said look at the walls, he meant the walls of his apartment! And then he drives back there and looks at them and goes, oh my god, there he is in World War I! It was like, dude, you already saw this.
Dude,
you definitely already
saw... Dude, you're the worst detective.
What are we watching right
how
now?
How do you have a job?
So him and another old man go to investigate Olivier's house. The other old man gets evilly locked in his own car and killed by smoke.
Yeah, it just explodes.
But then when Cameron Mitchell goes to investigate the smoke-filled car with his dead friend in it, the car explodes, and that kills Cameron Mitchell. Done.
Yeah, we don't actually get to see his death. It's just an explosion happens. Moving on to the next scene. We've got stuff to do.
We got places to be. Places you'll go. Meanwhile, Claire manages to sort of kidnap the devil's son by hitting him with a car.
Yep.
And then she's going to perform illicit heart surgery on him, but her heart surgery is rudely interrupted when she manages to get him into a surgical gown and herself into a doctor outfit, and she starts trying to take his heart out, but then the random woman from earlier in the movie that I told to keep in your back pocket shows up in nurse scrubs, grabs a pair of scissors, and starts stabbing the son of the devil.
And that doesn't matter at all.
Well, it does, because it makes it so that the devil gets loose enough to possess her and switch bodies with her, so that the attempt to take out his heart will ultimately fail.
Well, it's weird, because this doesn't happen immediately. Like, she gets his heart out.
Yeah.
And walks over to the box, puts it in there, and then when she turns around, it's like, nope, now he's switched.
I've switched bodies. And then there's a scream, we cut to a hallway shot, and he walks out of the building. And then back to the god and the devil.
Yep, and God's like, well, getting Claire. Survived that?
Yeah, that's the thing. Well, no, I don't know if she survived it or not. She might just be a soul in purgatory right now.
Maybe.
But anyway, he's like, yeah, I want Claire. And he's like, why would you guys be arguing over Claire? Claire died a while ago. She was killed by a demon son of Satan.
Yeah, the whole whole thing.
Also,
is,
she was definitely a devout Catholic. Why is this even an argument?
Oh, yeah. The whole time it was, oh, yeah, she was super devout. Even when her husband was like, yo, I have proof that, like, God's dead or whatever. She was like, no, I still believe in God and I'm going to try and stop the devil and I never do anything bad.
It's
There's
never
no
too
argument
late.
Here.
Yeah, it's not too late to not publish that horrible book, My Fantastic Four Looking Husband. They cut back to God and God's like, obviously I get her. And the devil's like, I don't even give a fuck. I want the band. I want the band on this train. That's all I want.
Every time, I just give me the band.
Just give me that
just
band.
Give me it.
Because, you know, all bands are fucking evil. And God's like, I don't know if this one's evil. Like,
you know, the kids these days, they don't pray to you. They don't care about you.
You haven't listened to their music. If you had, you'd know they were praying to me.
Oh, you call that music? I love that it's Satan is the one who's like, ah, kids these days and their music. And God's like, oh, no, if you listen to the lyrics, it's really quite good.
Really?
I'm a fan of Tool.
Because I did listen to the lyrics, and it's just these kids saying, you ain't got nothing to do a bunch of times. So I don't know.
No, it's a cry for help.
I'm a huge fan of Tool. Did you know that Learn to Swim is a song about a guy who was shit to death by elephants?
Shit to death by elephants.
Well, that's what the name Anima refers to, actual enemas given to elephants at the circus so that they wouldn't poop on stage.
Yes.
But anyway, get fucking Tool, pretentious shits. Anyway, God loves this shitty rock and roll music. Anyway, it's time for the train to crash.
Yep, train crashes. And
it's a toy train.
There's
not even a shot that would require there to be a toy train.
No, it's, for some reason we decided a head-on shot of a toy train reaching the end of tracks. Like, there's not, the reason it crashes apparently isn't that it hits something or something fucks up, it's that it reached the end of the toy tracks it was on.
Yeah, so it doesn't even fall off the tracks or anything. The toy train is only used for shots of an oncoming train.
Yes.
And then it explodes by putting the whole screen into a fireball and then cutting to shots of, and this is real, I am not kidding, a burning building.
Yep.
Not a train.
Yep. It is real weird. I don't know what they were going for here. And again, I need to reiterate, this toy train is like Thomas the Tank Engine level of fake. It is just real stupid looking.
It is the fakest. And normally it's real train shots they use in this movie. So there's a lot of shots of actual trains, but then when they need like 1 second of a train bearing down on the camera, they couldn't buy some stock footage of that. So they just used a toy black train.
Ugh.
And then cut to a burning building.
Yep. And then all of the people are lying there on the ground.
And then God kind of pops up at the very end to be like, I get the kids from the band as well. And then we cut to a train flying through space towards heaven. And the kids are playing that same fucking song again.
Great. Love it. That is the end of the movie.
The very end.
That is the night train to terror. Jeff, I want you to tell me what your favorite thing in this movie was.
Mm. My favorite thing, you say?
The best thing in this movie to you. Number one, a number one.
Oh, it's definitely the Satan and God casting. one of them's Tony Giorgio. I forget who plays God, but in the credits for the film, they are credited as the Satan as portrayed by Lucifer and God as himself.
That is some real stupid bullshit.
But their casting was actually not great, but amusing. Like, they did a great job on the makeup and wardrobe for these two characters. And turning Satan is the standard catty sort of like Paul Lind of Satan's. I'm always a fan of that shit. So I'm gonna say that the interstitial shots of Satan and God talking are my favorite part of this.
All right.
What would you say is your favorite part of Night Train to Terror?
It's 100% the claymation. It is. There is no way. It is not the absolute garbage town claymation that goes on here.
I know. I was leaving it to you.
The scene with that stupid bee in the death club, it goes to like land on the main character's hand, and they couldn't even put the claymation on a regular hand. So the hand is also just clay.
Yep.
It looks
a
so bad.
A lingering shot on a clay hand.
Oh my God. The whole thing is so bad.
Oh, that scene is so slow too. That bee was like beating its wings like once a minute. to keep it in the air. And then the whole shot, it's like 3 minutes of footage of just a camera being swooped around the room.
Yeah.
The shadows of the cameraman visible in every direction.
Oh, yeah. It's trying to do some Raimi cam.
Yeah.
And it is failing real bad.
Yeah, yeah. The trick to Raimi cam is that you can't be able to just see the obvious cameraman running around.
Yeah. So I loved the claymation in this. It was amazing to see a giant clay demon squish a tiny little clay man. It was my favorite thing in the world.
Oh, no!
Yep, that's the best. I loved it.
So there you go.
The worst thing in the movie for you, Jeff.
It's got to be the song those kids were singing. It's just that you ain't got nothing to... Hideous control now. Idiot control now. That song, again. Yeah. It was obvious that they had bought one song, and they were going to use it, damn it. So you hear it four times in the movie.
Oh, yeah.
There, in between each of the interstitials, before the first interstitial, and over the credits, you hear the same song.
Yep.
And it's a bad song, and I hated it. And I hated the kids who were singing it. Every one of them looked like they should be on, like, the backstage of a Nickelodeon daytime performance in 1986.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Yeah, so I hated all that, and I wish they were all dead. Probably a lot of them are.
I mean, most of them, I assume.
That's probably good, yeah. All right, so that makes me happy again. John, what was your least favorite thing?
God, I don't even know.
Is there anything that's bad, really?
No, nothing's bad. It's a great movie. No, I want to say the first movie that they do, just the way it was cut.
The Case of Harry Billings.
It was completely nonsensical until like the last 2 minutes of it. I had no idea what was going on.
It's not like it makes sense in the last 2 minutes because of what's going on screen. It's just that the narrator finally pops up and is like, all right. The selling body parts, evil doctor, cousin Eddie, shitter's full. God, go.
Man, we're done. Yeah, the whole thing was just like, you bought this weird, like, nonsense horror film, but the only thing you did was cut it so that you got maximum boobage.
Yeah,
that was it.
Every boob that was in it is in this.
Yes. So, I gotta say, that first one was just the worst.
Yeah, and I'm never a fan of, angrily exposed breasts.
Oh, yeah. This thing is, like, really violently aggressive implied rape. Like, whoo, man, this is some bad times.
Yeah, I have a hard time popping a midnight movie boner when the boobs are tied down.
Yeah.
Like involuntarily, and there's no safe word, and there's no visible cutting implement for getting them free. I'm just saying.
Oh, there was a visible cutting implement.
Not for setting loose the ladies, though. No, every time a movie's like, yeah, you're going to get your fill of T and A because these women are about to die. And I'm like, ew, no.
Stop it.
This is boner shrinking.
So there we go. And now we're each going to give it the rating 0 to 5, giving it the rating out of 10. Jeff, Midnight, Train to Terror.
I have no idea. I need you to go first on this one. I need you to go first.
All right. Night Train to Terror. I'm going to give it a 1.5. You know what? I'll bump it to a 2.
Oh my.
I'm bumping it to a 2 because of the claymation.
That's a whole half point.
Yeah, a whole half point for that claymation. The, like, it loses most of its points for that first movie, but the rest of it was kind of weird and, like, dreamlike enough that I was interested to watch it. And, like you said, God and the Devil, like, they were good. Every time it cut to them, I was like, look at these guys. This is great.
A couple of old actors just having a good time.
Yeah. So
I think I have to cut this down. I'm going to give it the 1.5. And
okay.
Most of that is for claymation. The big failing to this film is that it's got 3 lead characters, and I don't remember them. Like, okay, first one, lead character is a brainwashed man who does the right thing in the last 2 minutes, I guess, maybe, sort of, I don't know. But he's still a man who killed his own wife.
Yeah.
The second one, it is a creep who wants to rescue a porn actor from herself, but once he gets together with her, keeps her in porn anyway.
Huh?
And then in the third one, it's some lady who is not there until the last couple minutes.
Yep. Like, I don't know if it's just how it was edited or the movies they got, but man, all of the main characters in these stories were just like, I am not likable or here.
So yeah, 1.5 from me.
There you go. So a 3.5 total for the Night Train to Terror.
So this is supposed to be like one of them Z-grade cult classics. Like, it's gotten a DVD Blu-ray style re-release with like cast and crew commentary, including crew or directors and stuff from the movies that were cut apart and put into it.
Yeah.
Do you think it deserves that? Do you think this movie needs to be the sort of shit that like Criterion covers? And
yes, you know, the Criterion collection of Night Train to Terror. That's exactly what we need.
I'm just saying, how excited are you to go watch this at Alamo Drafthouse, knowing that Harry Knowles will be sitting right behind you?
I would honestly love to get the commentary just from the interstitial movie things, or like if I could find out what was going on with any of these movies and why they didn't get a release, or if they did and then just got bought up later.
Yeah.
I would love to know the background of that.
I'd like to watch the whole thing with no commentary at all except for Richard Mall.
Richard Mall just showing up. Yeah, I was collecting a paycheck here.
Well, I'd like for him to not remember it. Just the whole time.
I don't know.
I did that?
That's weird.
Huh? Wait, that doesn't seem like me.
I don't think I would do that.
I feel like I would have turned this down.
And then when he sees the stunt double guy, he's like, oh, that's right. I did turn this down eventually.
I did one day on set and it was like, fuck this. This doesn't make any sense.
So there you go. There is the Night Train to Terror. Thank you so much for listening. And of course, we are the System Mastery Podcasts. We're
the System Mastery Boys.
We got so many stuff.
Dudes.
We got our main site, SystemMasteryPodcast.com. You can find all of our content, including the Movie Masteries there. And we've got Twitter and Facebook and Gmail and all sorts of nonsense. We've got a Discord now.
Yeah, we sure do. If you want to join us on the Discord and marvel at how rarely we're actually in there, then you can do that by going to Twitter and looking for our stickied post, because that's the link that'll take you to our Discord.
It's the only one on our System Mastery Twitter, so just look for the one stickied post.
Yeah, nothing else we've ever said we felt like needed to keep being said.
Yeah.
Most things we'd prefer you to forget we said.
Nice.
Nice. Retweet, nice.
So, and if you like what you're hearing, you want to support us, we have our own Patreon, patreon.com/systemmastery. You can support us at any level there. We appreciate anything you can give. And if you can't, we of course understand that. But if you do, we've got bonus content for our main System Mastery podcast. And if you listen to the Expounded Universe podcast we do, we are achingly close to our next goal where we take that weekly.
That's correct. Instead of one episode covering three chapters of an old Star Wars Expanded Universe every 2 weeks, you'll get it every one. Instead of Shadows of the Empire taking us 10 months to get through, it'll only take like 5.
Yeah.
People may say that we're spending way too much time agonizing over Shadows of the Empire.
They're wrong.
That book needs. Someone pointed out the other day that by the time we're done, we'll have spent more time talking about it than the length of the audiobook version of it. And you know what? I'm going to go out on a record here. I don't even care who is reading it. It could be Roger Reese. It could be anyone reading that audiobook of Shadows of the Empire. Our thing's funnier.
It's better.
It's way better. Yeah.
So there you go. We've got that. Check out all of our stuff. We love hearing from you. And of course, if you want to, you can rate and review on iTunes, Stitcher, whatever your podcast thing of choice is. We love getting those reviews. And of course, it lets other people find us, so we can grow and become an even larger amorphous blob that consumes all.
Yep. Now, John, I got to go, because if you don't mind, I got to go take a big smiley poop.
Just one big gleeful poop.
Joy-inducing. It's like a little epiphany every time. You know how they call the orgasm the little death?
Yeah.
I want to stop this now. I want to stop talking about this. This is gross.
Okay. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back in a couple of weeks. You have a good one.